Leading up to Election Day on November 2nd, KUCB will be featuring interviews with Alaska Senate candidates about fisheries policy. This week, we had a chance to catch up with Republican nominee Joe Miller. Welcome. So, starting off, before the primary, fishing industry groups like the United Fishermen of Alaska immediately offered their support to your opponent, Lisa Murkowski. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've done to reach out to fishing organizations in the meantime?
What we're doing is we're making sure that we talk to fisheries groups. That's what we've been doing from the very beginning of this race, working very aggressively to ensure that we educated on fishery issues. Notwithstanding the position of UFA, our position is that fisheries are an incredible part of the Alaskan economy, and that, in fact, whatever work that we do in the U.S. Senate has got to be to maximize that resource on a maximum sustained yield basis. One of the things that a lot of listeners may not know is that I've got a master's in economics from the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, which is a resource-based degree. And so fisheries are something that, although I've personally been involved in, have some educational background in, and I'm excited to be in a position, if Alaskans honor me with their vote on November 2nd, to put forward that industry in a way that benefits all of the folk that are involved in the fisheries throughout Alaska.
So this year especially, the status of the western stock of Steller sea lions has been a big issue for fishermen in the Western Aleutians, since protecting the species is expected to result in the closure of some fisheries. When the Endangered Species Act and the interests of commercial fishermen butt against each other, how do you weigh these competing interests, and what is your stance on this issue specifically?
Well, again, it has to be a result that is provides maximum sustained yield of the resource. And, you know, one of the things that I bring to the table that I think Alaskans should take heart in is that I'm not bought one by one particular interest or another. I mean, I truly am going to try to make decisions based upon what's best for all of us. It's interesting if you look at those that have contributed to my campaign, those that have supported, those that have endorsed. I truly am somebody that has kind of come up from grassroots. I don't have any establishment ties. I don't have any industry that's stuffing cash in my back pocket that's saying, look, you've got to vote this way or that. Rather, when the decisions come to the table, it truly is going to be an assessment that's based upon good science, that's based upon what's best for all of the users, and that is fair. And that really is what I bring that I think is refreshing to many people. It's one of the reasons why we've had such a strong support network build up throughout the state, because people understand that that really truly is my approach, not just to the fisheries, but also to other issues that are facing Alaska, particularly where you've got competing users and various resources.
And on that note, you've sort of cast yourself as the pro-resource development candidate in this race. Of course, both resource development and protection of our state fisheries are both important issues to Alaskans, but sometimes these objectives are at odds with each other, with the most controversial example being Pebble Mine. Could you describe your stance on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, resource development, I mean, that means all resources, right? I mean, you can't develop one resource at the expense of another. Fisheries are critically important to the state. And, you know, my position with Pebble has remained consistent that the development of that project, if it goes forward, cannot be with the ill consequence. In other words, it can't hurt the fisheries. And so I understand that there's real concern that the tailings could, there could be a leakage that could create acidification and adversely impact that fishery. We got to make certain that if Pebble does go forward, that it does not adversely impact the fishery in that area. It's a major, major resource. I'm talking about the fishery. And you cannot develop one at the expense of the other. You can't say that you're gaining here and then yet cut the economic benefit of the other resource there, or hurt the families that are dependent on the other resource in another area. So it has to be done in a way to ensure that we aren't, extracting one resource at the cost of another, which is so critically important to Alaska.
So oil spill response is another point of friction between those two industries. Your opponent, Lisa Murkowski, objected to a voice vote on a bill that would have raised the oil spill liability cap from $75 million to $10 billion. How do you feel about raising the oil spill liability cap?
You know, I haven't even heard, and it surprised me that McAdams has not pushed that issue more. I mean, I too, was just absolutely shocked. I mean, it was Murkowski, I think, alone standing against that increase in the liability cap. And then you look at who's contributed to her campaign, and you understand why she did it. And that's what I mean. That goes directly back to what I said earlier, that I'm not bought by anybody. And yet you look in that boat or look at what she did there, and then you look at who's contributed to her campaign, and you understand fully why she took that action. Now, I absolutely am resource development friendly. And if you think that I think that Alaskans should pick up the tab for bad resource development practices, think again. I mean, that is just absolutely crazy that you should say that the American taxpayer or the Alaskans themselves should pay for the cost of a spill created by bad practices. Obviously, if the industry is out there developing an oil resource and they do a spill or they make a spill by their bad practices, they got to pay for it. And they absolutely need to be in a position to make sure that they contain it. If you say that they face the full liability of the spill, then clearly they're going to have the servers and other equipment nearby to make sure that that spill has the least impact possible. And I really stand against this concept that the American taxpayer should subsidize an oil spill. That, to me, just makes absolutely no sense. And her vote is only understandable when you understand who contributed to her campaign.
The FDA is currently considering approval of genetically modified salmon. In passing, you've suggested that you might support this. Could you please elaborate?
I think that that really is a misconstrued position. And in fact, I may not have said that properly when I was interviewed on that question. My response is, I'm a science guy. I like good science. But absolutely, let me make this very, very abundantly clear. Genetically engineered salmon that could escape, that could end up in natural waters, that could end up creating adverse impact to our fisheries, should be absolutely prohibited. I mean, we cannot play games when we don't know the outcome, the ultimate impact to the fisheries. That's something that cannot be done. And, of course, I guess there is some concern, too, even if you have, those fish that are altered in supposedly contained areas, the concern about escape. If they, for example, many fish will end up populating other areas because fish eggs can be transported by waterfowl. And so I've got some real concerns about it. When I first answered, it was more of a science-based response. I sense, and this is, again, because we're talking to people involved in fisheries, that we make adjustments on occasions because, I don't know it all. And that's why we have to talk to people that are informed. This is one area where we've become increasingly educated about that issue. And I will tell you just unequivocally right now that it's a mistake for that to go on because of the impact that we aren't even aware of what impact it could cause, but because of the possibility that it could impact fisheries that are so dependent to Alaskans.
And so while we're discussing science, there have been some concerns expressed in coastal communities that climate change is causing effects like ocean acidification. What is your stance on climate change?
Well, I think, and this goes back again to the idea that we have got to be informed and we've got to be rational and we've got to be scientifically based about our approach to things. There's been a real effort to cast current climate change as a consequence of man-made activity. We know that climate change occurs. I don't deny that. It's clearly evidenced even in the ice cores before the industrial age, for example, massive climate change in the world. We can prove it. And we know that we have changes now. In the 70s, there was concern about global cooling. Now there's concern about global warming. To sit back in your chair and say, okay, well, man has no impact, that's not a real scientific approach. But also to sit up at the table and say that man is definitely causing this adverse impact to the environment. We know it, and so therefore this is what we have to do. Is equally disingenuous. I think that what we have to do is make sure that first, if we do believe that the climate change that's ongoing now is not just climatic cycles like we've seen in the past, that we better have science that backs it up. Because when we suggest a response to climate change, like a carbon tax or cap and trade, and we do that without being fully informed, but to say, hey, it's such a catastrophe that's waiting, we got to do this, and don't evaluate the impact on people. Like, for example, the cap-and-trade bill that was proposed that Murkowski co-sponsored with Arlen Specter in 2007, estimated to cost $3,000 to $4,000 per Alaskan family. In addition to that, a carbon tax, for example, would have an adverse impact on the gas line because our gas on the North Slope is high-carbon gas. So we know that there's real adverse impacts to people in Alaska, and yet we don't understand that having that carbon reduction is actually going to have any impact at all on global warming. But it doesn't mean that you throw out the science and you quit studying it. You obviously do. But until you've got a real good link to a activity that you can curtail or even an activity that you can encourage on the human side of it that will have an impact on climate change, and you've evaluated the cost to people, then you shouldn't be doing it. But it seems like everybody's jumping on this bandwagon in a way that really the only impact is it's reducing the ability of this nation to move ahead. I mean, you've got in China, for example, today, I heard a calculation, there's one coal plant coming online a day in China. I mean, they're the highest energy consumer in the world today. And, of course, this is something that's not important to them. It's something that they are not engaged in. The impact, obviously, that we need to adopt, if there is some impact, has got to be something that does not put America down at the cost of its competitiveness with other countries. In like manner, when we talk about the increased acidification of the ocean, I mean, this is something that should have been studied for the last several decades. But the first good data that we started to have come in on this was about 5 years ago. And it's something that needs to be comprehensively studied. You know, the inputs from that acidification need to be studied. Is it natural cause? Is it the runoff that's primarily the input? Is this five-year time that we've gotten data points? Is this something which is not cyclical? Is this something that has just suddenly started? And those are the questions that have got to be answered, and we've got to have the good answers and the good science before we can decide how we as people are going to address the situation. But it can't be something that takes food off Alaskans' tables, hurts the productivity of the country, just because somebody has a guess that there may be some sort of connection.
So changing gears, in the past couple of weeks, your campaign has come out really strongly against Alaskans Standing Together, an independent group supporting Lisa Murkowski that is backed by the Native corporations. Can you talk a little bit about why?
First of all, it's illegal. I mean, these groups that are pumping money into this Alaskan Standing Together are federal contractors. And the federal law says federal contractors with federal money cannot use the money they get from the government to try to influence a federal election. It's that simple. And we filed an FEC complaint about that. I think that complaint's going to be resolved in our favor, but obviously not soon enough to address the outcome of the race. I think it's unfortunate that this group has been formed to in part slime at me. In fact, many of the commercials that have come out are simply not based in fact. They certainly misconstrue my positions, and they've got to be called out on. This is not, this campaign is a rural Alaska-focused campaign. I think part of the reason why some of these regional corporations are against my campaign is from the very outset, we said that, look, the benefits from these 8A contracts are not getting down to the shareholders. They're not getting down to the villages. There certainly are. Siri has done some good work with their shares, but there are others out there where the real benefit is not being felt at the village level, where if you look at the village today and you look back at it 30 years ago, it's not much different today as it was then. I mean, that's a testament not just to how the 8A monies have not been used effectively to move shareholders ahead. It's also a testament about how federal money itself has not moved forward the villages.
And lastly, what can you offer fishing communities that your opponents cannot?
Well, I promise you, I am a fighter. I mean, I'm probably the most disclosed candidate the state, maybe even the United States, has ever seen. We now have my personnel file. I certainly have more documents out there by far than the President of the United States has. So you know who you got, you know who I am, but you also know from my record that I am a fighter, and I will fight like none other to put forward the state in its interest, to make sure that when the federal government collapses from its bankruptcy, that we have the capacity to make jobs here, that we can stand on our own 2 feet. And that's my commitment to every Alaskan. It's not a special interest that I'm committed to. I'm committed to you. And I look forward to serving in Washington, D.C. if you honor me with your vote on November 2nd.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Miller. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too.